Hi, guys. This is Richard Sachs. Welcome back. We're on Lost Arts Radio. We've got a super guest tonight in Dr. Tao Braun, who's an expert in bioterrorism and interested in the prevention of it and analysis in order to find solutions. And he's also really involved in, he's got a background in psychology, but also in finding remedies for what's going on with the whole COVID situation. So we have so much to talk about. He was on a great interview with Mike Adams that we posted on lostartsradio.com, and I recommend listening to that carefully, and we're going to take off from there and see where we go. So welcome, Dr. Braun. It's a treat to have you here.
Thank you, Richard, and I think your soothing voice will have a good, very needed and welcome soothing interview about a very heavy subject. I absolutely love how silky smooth your voice is, and I think voice has become important for a whole bunch of reasons. I think that I've been paying attention to language so much through the beginning. The pandemic for me was a sort of a new evaluation of a very big threat. My work, as you mentioned, in terms of counterterrorism and law enforcement and bioterrorism stuff, at its core, it really comes down to understanding human behavior enough to know, hey, we've got a problem over here. This person it wants to create some immense suffering, and there's a philosophical side that has to come with that, because I think it's very important to work out. You know, people pay money to suffer on a roller coaster, and then they stand in line again to suffer all over again. And so suffering is in terms of what we allow for ourselves to do to each other and for people to do to us, just like anything else, this has taken a long time to come to some mutual agreement. And so when those rules get broken, like somebody arriving at a parade to kill people, that's a big deal. It's a big deal for humanity. And so I think that we currently are in a serious deal breaker over here, in that there's a handful of people that have the desire to ruin and end life as we know it on this planet. And I think that it strikes me as odd that us as human beings, most people, present company excluded, because I know enough about you to know that your own deep thinking would allow you to spot problems much earlier than other people. But most people are just not comfortable to think that there could ever be a nefarious person out there that's willing to plot and plan their demise. And it's just too far. It's too far for people.
Well, there are various kinds of addiction that you mentioned, and people are familiar with obvious drug addictions like heroin and things like that. But people have become addicted to suffering in ways that you're talking about, that you've noticed in your psychological background. But on the surface, everybody is struggling to feel good. And so they don't want to talk about this kind of stuff or look at it seriously. And in fact, as you know, when a detective is investigating a serial killer and they try to get into the mentality of the killer, a lot of times they develop serious psychological problems themselves.
Yeah.
And so when I started looking at this stuff, I quickly ran into the same thing and had to do something with my own focus and my own consciousness so that I wouldn't absorb the emotional frequency of what I was looking at. And if you make that change, you can look at anything without getting upset.
Absolutely. And I also think that there's something to be said about sort of the right fit for any task. So, you know, I noticed I wasn't built, for example, to watch a game of football. You know, the Super Bowl might be exciting to a lot of people. I remember going to watch a Super Bowl party and remembering one year to take a book with me. Because I wanted to be social and I wanted to be around other people. But the idea of watching other people participate in a physical activity? Is this something that I'm just not built for? Either I'm going to participate and I'm going to, you know, I'd be I'm horrible at most sports, but if I was going to participate in something like football, I'd much rather be trying to play the game than watching others play the game. Now, of course, there's yeah. differences in terms of listening to music or going and appreciating a piece of art. But as a bystander, there's certain tasks that I have trouble with. And so even with this very dark subject, I'm energized, as I'm sure you are too, by discovery. And so if you're discovering dark matter versus light matter,
right.
it's still discovery, and there's joy in the discoveries you're making.
And there's purpose about this discovery, because we're trying to see if we care about the future of life and humanity. We want to know, all right, what can we contribute to make that more likely that it turns out well?
Absolutely. And I think something changed for me recently. I have a 11-month-old baby. And I think that having a child in today's time, I think that it's an anchor point for me, because my questions each day aren't necessarily about saving the planet for myself anymore, or for you, mm-hmm. Or for anybody that I might run into. I have a task, which is I have offspring, and that person didn't ask me to be part of his creation. But if I am going to bring offspring into this world, it makes sense, at least to me, that part of my responsibility is to create a set of circumstances that afford him the ability to thrive, to have pleasure, to have less struggle. Right. You know, it's been very grounding to see it like that way, because I think, especially with the pandemic, for me has made me very intolerant to most human beings, and even more than I was before. And so without having, my son anchoring me into, going, oh, how can I do better today? And what other information do I need? And what else can I tell people about what I know? It ultimately has a nice, very practical end goal. It's just saying, does my day help my son in the future?
That's perfect.
It works.
What kind of intolerance are you noticing in yourself that you're talking about?
Okay, so I'll give you an example. I went to take my one of my best buddies in this whole world is my dog Shadow, and mm-hmm. And Shadow landed up recently being put on insulin, and the profile that he had, I suspected that it would be a fairly transient form of needing insulin, especially that. I find it astonishing that most people are unaware, especially vets, are unaware, not connecting the dots, that most mammals are cycling through this pandemic and its various forms. And most dogs and cats have cycled through SARS-CoV-2 and the different strains of Omicron. And so they're not as impacted. Certain species are. Certain breeds within those species are, but when it came recently, his health declined pretty rapidly, and so a decision was made that we'll put him on some insulin for a little while. But I suspected that it was going to be pretty temporary, even though numerous vets have told me, that's not how it works. And, right. Especially with, you might find that with a cat, but not with a dog. And so the intolerance is coming from having to trust expertise from people that would now expect me to have a consult in a parking lot, because you're mm-hmm. not allowed inside the building anymore. My wife wasn't allowed to use the bathroom as an unvaccinated person. She literally got asked the question, when she needed to go inside to pee. She was asked, are you vaccinated? Like, that has any bearing on anything. Wow. And so when a doctor, a physician of animal medicine, which interestingly enough, animal medicine is much more thorough than human medicine. They have to know about so many different species, big and small. They also have to work with patients that are often very similar to a doctor that has to work with a severe non-communicative patient, because the animals can't tell them what the problem is. So they tend to be wonderful physicians. They also is a group of veterinary doctors that tend to be some of the most pathological and psychopathic on the planet. And their interest in veterinary science, oddly enough, has got nothing to do with compassion for the animals or taking care of them. They are find themselves in pharmaceuticals. If you have a look at most vaccine development teams, you know, find most of them are vets. They have the you can look at their titles behind their name, and they're normally DVM. I want to call him Boiler because he's the Pfizer.
The head of Pfizer.
The head of the Pfizer's version of this genocidal biocide.
Is it Bourla or something?
Bourla, like that? Yeah. And so he's a person that fits perfectly with this description, where there's an absolute comfort for them to experiment on animals. The cruelty that they once inflicted on animals allows them to take on these professions where they are highly motivated in terms of their own ambitions and profit, but mostly it's sort of the playground that they get to really be wonderfully abusive under the guise of science. And this is a perfect example of how many people go from animal medicine to vaccine development. It's very hard for me as I go through the information about SARS-CoV-2, and it's not within 10 minutes you're already into something where they talk about the animal model of it, or if you look at Rolf Barrick talking about the development of these peptides, and they talk about building the animal model, and they were able to do this in the mouse. It took me back to the very first time in my Bachelor of Science where I was in a lab there was a scientist that was explaining her work. And I remember sitting listening to how callous this person sounded about the type of work that they do each day by going and essentially purposefully creating suffering onto a being in the name of helping another being. And
well, they actually believe that, you know, that attitude is taught in school.
Yeah.
To be a scientist, you have to have no emotion.
Yeah, so what they've done now, and I think the pandemic was the sort of final layer to this, is that it's very easy to see that we now are their lab rats, and that all of their experiments and all their data and all of the efficacy data has got this in mind, that there is this number that they've come up with where the sacrifice is sufficient. Or is acceptable, you know, this idea that X amount of people will die, you know, X amount of children will die from being exposed to this pathogen, and it's acceptable within this experiment. And so, yeah, you're right in terms of that they are completely calloused and taught, and you don't last long, and you will not be promoted if you show any interest into the non-harm of any of these creatures, or wanting them to have a better life than what's being provided for them, or even a discussion that says, hey, you know, when transferring the rats from one cage to another, can we not, you know, walk them over, holding them by their tails and their forceps? Like, can we find at least a nice way of transfer? Like, the idea that you're sort of going to be human within this inhuman system, you would get turfed out, you'd get weeded out of that program.
That's right. It means you're not a real scientist.
Right. And so, you know, you can know that to go back to your question, you know, I think that the intolerance for me now, it's creating a profile in me which I don't like seeing in real time, which is this very much a survivalist mentality, a prepper-like mentality, where, you know, if a veterinary surgeon is going to have a consult with me outside wearing a medical mask that couldn't even begin to stop the particle size of these peptide chains. And that person loses credibility with me in terms of the willingness to participate in a genocide as the primary driver for the intolerance. The second layer is the willingness to not speak up about junk science. The third layer is the willingness to compromise their own industry to the point where they have accepted that it's acceptable to see a patient and their client, their human, you know, companion that's brought them for a medical issue in such a compromised way that they're prepared to do it standing next to the wheel of a car, says volumes about how cowardly and how helpless that person feels, that they would just go along with this when the rest of society sees them in their white coats or sees them with their titles and holds them in such with such revere that they are essentially the weapon, that they are the weapon that's being used to weaponize the information. If it didn't come, if it didn't come from the people that you interacted with, if every scientist in the world had just said no, if every doctor, if every person who had the enough physics to call themselves a scientist would have just said the first week that they suggested masking, they said, "Do you understand the size of these particles? Like, can we just gather around a table and I'll just use, you know, scale models to show you how absurd you're being?"
I think it's a tribute to education, isn't it? Because they've been taught that what you're defining is the establishment of a new religion. And you could say it's a medical aspect of scientism. And they've been taught in school that there are certain sources of information that are unquestionably reliable. One of those is CDC. Another one is WHO. And there are others. And there are certain individuals, too. And if they say something, you don't have to check it out. It's true. And one of the things that they've said is that vaccines save the world. It's the only reason any of us are here. And so, you know, and the usual stuff as well. If you question that, vaccines eradicated polio and they eradicated smallpox, both of which are lies. Yeah. But it's built on stuff like that. And if you question it, you're out. You can't be a priest anymore.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, the word, I think it was Mao Zedong that said, you know, that religion is the opiate of the people. And I think that, you know, less kind words is, I agree with you completely that that's a sort of, it drives whether it's a religion or a cult or, a team that says, you know, this is the way that we all do it now and come along with us or you're out. I think what's fascinating is there is certainly enough social psychology to explain why people do certain things in terms of agreeing and cohesion experiments. And there's this wonderful YouTube video that people can look up where there's a study, I think it was done out of UPenn, where they basically show how easy it is to create a new rule and get people to follow that rule and then get the original rule makers to leave the system and see that the second and third tier in the fourth year, continue.
Wasn't
on.
Wasn't there some video about some lady sitting in a waiting room?
Correct. Doctor, correct.
Right?
Yeah,
and I think that's you're supposed to stand up when there's a beep.
Yes, exactly. That social experiment is a wonderful illustration. But I think that what I mean, you know, I'm a very blunt person, and the judgmental of my side of myself has always given myself permission to dig a little deeper. And at its core, nice way to put it would call it energy efficiency, that it takes energy to challenge something. And so if you don't have energy, if you want to put your energy somewhere else, whether it's, you know, somebody going home and playing a video game tonight instead of, you know, caring about their world, then energy dynamics will create this this agreement with the you know, whatever it is that you're supposed to be agreeing. But I think the non-nice way to say it is it's just laziness. You know, most people are just
what
lazy.
What would happen to your feeling about those people that you're intolerant of if you remembered the power of hypnosis and mind control and saw that they were subjects of a very sophisticated, aggressive program of mind control and they didn't even know what they were doing? Would you still feel the same toward them?
So it's interesting because I'm able to split the person, the judgment, when I felt uncomfortable that this vet would have that much value anymore for me in terms of being able to give me solid advice rather than me going home and using Google. It wasn't that I was judging, the part of it is that I'm judging the nature of this person to go along with it and being fascinated by the unwillingness to break the rules and to think for themselves. I am tolerant to those that have been tricked, but I think that what we all owe ourselves, I'm transplanting some of my own personal experience, is that when you get tricked in the moment. The lead up towards being tricked is very important in terms of did you give yourself time and energy and focus and training to minimize the ability for you to get hypnotized? Because hypnotism is just a form of suggestion. And if you if you prime yourself that you are not going to take on suggestions.
What if you didn't even know it was an issue?
I suspect that if we truly got people to be really honest, I suspect that there's a category that includes children. It includes people that are potentially cognitively impaired. I think that there is a group of people that for me would get a complete 100% no accountability score in terms of they didn't know it was happening. And then I suspect the bulk of the people know it's happening and are willing to participate in the happening of something because it makes more, there's more benefit in their own minds to accepting the happening than challenging it. And then I think that the pushback that you'll get from someone is that they'll deny that they're doing that, but their behavior will signal otherwise. Their discomfort, their unwillingness to even have a conversation shows you that they are not truly accepting something. To truly accept something, I think in a very purposeful, motivated, and an all-knowing way, I think you're even more open to hearing something that challenges you because you don't perceive a perceive a threat to that challenge. So let's use this as a really nice way of just illustrating a point over here. So if you're willing to be agile at the face of something happening and it doesn't challenge or you don't get stressed. There was a time in my life that doing what I just did, admitting that the computer was about to run out of power and that I have to change from camera one to camera two, right? It would have been uncomfortable for me. I think that we all owe it to ourselves to create a sense of realness where we pierce through the veil and we allow ourselves to say, well, you know, Tao and Richard are having a chat about some things that they care about. And there's some things that are supporting their chat that involve technology. And some of that can run smoothly and some can have issues. Let's not get flustered by the sort of fluff on the sides when the true essence of what we're chatting about is, you know, the thing that is happening, you know, that we're talking about is a massive worldwide culling that's happening in real time. Now, I have a question for you that I'm going to come back to, which is, you know, if people have been tricked, the lead up to that trickness didn't come overnight. It came through a complete set of programming, and each thing along the way, at every opportunity, there was a choice to go along with the programming or not to go along with the programming. And there was reward for either of those choices. I just don't think that many people have had the opportunity to see how rewarding life can be if you are willing to challenge systems. We are always being shown illustrations, whether it's through the news, through a movie, through storytelling. People like to romanticize problems that had to happen to strengthen someone, sort of the Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. And right. if they make it through, then this awful thing, you know, like sleeping in your car and then becoming, you know, Rowling, who wrote the Harry Potter series.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, she's sleeping in her car as a homeless person.
Right.
Now, the romantic part of that story is told, oh, look how, you know, she persevered and she finally made it. No, right. We're a very cruel society and we're awful to creative people. And until they prove themselves, until they, you know, are willing to be, sacrifice themselves so much so that they can entertain the Colosseum on our behalf, we're willing to do awful things to them. And if they truly make it and we want to call them a celebrity, then we'll tell their story where sleeping in your car was definitely a part of the journey that had to take place. And without it, she wouldn't have been as successful. She wouldn't have been as tapping as deep. And so I think that my point with that is that at every given chance, and maybe even through this conversation, we can encourage people to be even bolder at dismantling these very systems that have always enslaved us, where we've been, you know, been willing to be trapped. But my question to you, because it's a great question you asked me, is what do you feel about people's level of accountability in this massive? It's gone beyond a genocide at this point. I mean, it's a worldwide culling of and eventually the death of all human life.
Yeah, yeah. Not that many people realize that. And you're asking about how much are individual people accountable.
Yeah, your level of what do you feel about that? And then also, what do you do about those moments where, you know, the willingness of people to not see what's right in front of them? Like, how do you how do you cope with that?
This is such a deep question with implications for life or death for the world. I mean, it's not an academic little question.
No.
So, if you're the controller operating the programming, mind control, trying to keep people from awareness of what their real choices are, there are a couple of things that you do, and you know this from your psychological background. One is that you make them unaware that they have a choice. Keep that hidden. You don't say, are you going to choose A or B? You don't even bring up the choice because you want it automatic. And the other is you maximize fear. And when you do that, you've learned over, you know, a long time of developing these techniques, how to make people just fall into a choice before they even notice it. And it brings me back to a scriptural reference. And I'm not religious, but I think there are things within scriptures and the Bible that are
absolutely
incredible. And one of them, and deep, and one of them is a quote attributed to Jesus saying, about murderers, forgive them because they don't know what they do. They don't know what they did. Actually, it was about the people condemning him to death too. And I think he would have the same attitude toward anybody. And I've come to the same conclusion. And so that doesn't make it a simple, superficial answer, because we have ultimately infinite choices and no real limitations on what we can do other than what we believe is impossible. So my answer would be a combination of saying, you are entirely responsible for everything in your experience of life, 100% on yourself, which realization of which gives you unlimited power to fix it. But at the same time, you're not to blame for anything, because whatever you fell for, there was programming that led you to that. And so if you see that and you drop the blame, it opens up ways to fix this situation that if we get stuck on blame, we're not going to see.
Yeah, and I think I love your reference, and I love the reminder, you know, that forgiveness is always a part of moving forward. I think that there's a sort of a combined approach that I think is needed at this time, a leadership approach. I think that there was immense power in Jesus pointing out that the common person really had very little knowledge of the what was taking place behind the scenes that ultimately led to him being crucified, sort of put to death for being this activist, this revolutionary. Now, when I've noticed that when I go near some of these topics, I think that I've noticed sometimes I read the comments from people, and I think that I want to encourage people to know that there's always value in looking through historical narrative and trying to assess it and put it into current context, and know that for me, I just want to make the point that my interpretations of things should never feel disrespectful to people in the way that they're choosing to believe a historical record. That this, right. In my mind, at least, a lot of things can live side by side, and one this of which is that Jesus, when people say that Jesus died for our sins, you know, part of it is that there's a nice wake-up call here for people that have fallen for this, is that as they start, working towards this understanding, and this will happen to more and more people that are slowly not taking the quote unquote vaccines anymore. Now, right. There's a part that I just have to get into, otherwise I think it could be confusing for people. So the bioweapon itself, that's the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2, very briefly, I think the thing that I'm starting to get known for is that my work is concentrated on, there was the binding of that molecule to the ACE receptors, of where, the theoretical and somewhat provable model could show that this is a place where a virus could bind to and then use the host's resources to replicate, because it's an obligate parasite. And I think even that gets to the point where it's way too complicated. To me, the issue the big and smallness of things complicate things for our human brains. And so what I like to do is I often just like to scale things up and down. So to me, if you were looking for a place to build a house and you were driving around and you were looking at terrain and you were saying, oh, wow, that seems like a decent piece of land to buy. I really like the gradient on it. I like that when it rains, there's going to be runoff from the rain, and that it won't flood the house. I like the way that it's it's sort of there's a secure feeling of the natural boundaries around it. And then importantly, if somebody was very excited because they were under a time crunch of building this home for themselves, I mean, they could go, wow, I think I really like this piece of land because there was already work done here, and they've actually laid down a foundation already that comes with the piece of land. And that would be the equivalent of looking at these ACE receptors and knowing that it's a very, it's the insert point, the part that makes sense for the molecular binding of the spike protein to lock in. And just like any other living creature, to then extract what it needs. But there's another part to all of this that is either being purposefully, in my opinion, left out, or the ACE was used as a distraction, but it's really corrupted the ability for people to understand the disease progression and to save lives. And that is that there's a higher binding affinity, and that is to the what's known as the acetylcholine receptors, and specifically the nicotinic acetylcholine receptors. And so when you look at those are, most people are familiar with neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine, and they forget that there's this neurotransmitter that really is a the great controller. When you mentioned the word control earlier, or you know, when you can't escape the idea that any person that's interested in killing a bunch of people, ultimately they're coming from this point where they want to control life itself and they want to play God. Mm-hmm. And in our bodies, the acetylcholine receptors and acetylcholine as a chemical are essentially the controllers of a lot of our circuitry and a lot of our chemicals and our hormones.
Yeah.
And so the part of the trick over here that's allowed people to be compliant and has allowed people to, you know, if Jesus was around, he would say, you know, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. And part of that is that they are literally being taken over, not only psychologically in their mind control, but also chemically, to the point that this downregulation of this nicotinic receptor really creates a very rigid, non-creative, non-questioning thinking. It's the chemical of slavery, really.
Yeah, that brings up the whole, well, I want to say one other thing. We've got so much to talk about. It would be nice to have several days to finish. But one of the things that you brought up made me think of what is intelligence, you know, as far as the question of whether people know what's going on. And there are at least two major different varieties of intelligence. One is what they measure with IQ tests. You know, the ability for pattern recognition and interpretation of what the patterns mean and calculation ability in your head and stuff like that. And a lot of the really malevolent people have high IQs in that sense.
Yes.
There's another type of intelligence, which is the ability to see the obvious or what should be obvious. And that can be totally different. So I would say that people like Bill Gates and Soros and these other, not the highest members in the power structure, because they don't use names we would ever hear, but the ones on the level that we were talking about, they're intelligent on one level. They're totally opposite of intelligent on the other, more deep level, which is the understanding, the intuitive connection to the knowledge that we're all networked with each other. And we are all literally so deeply connected that, and this is the origin of a lot of the scriptural references that love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that's not just academic. That's because at a deep level, they're yourself in another form, literally.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Once you know that, you can't do what these criminals do because you're doing it to yourself. And they don't know. They really don't know. They have the other kind of intelligence. And that leaves them setting themselves up for a bad fall because of what they're doing unknowingly.
Yeah.
Even though they think they know.
You're spot on. And I think that I like the comparison to intelligence, because I think that part of it is that the issue around defining intelligence has always been it leaves out some very important components to society needs to always include in any intelligence assessment a collaborative discussed and agreed upon set of values around that intelligence ought to include concepts like ethical decisions, and that with intelligence and the emotional intelligence and social intelligence, they get compartmentalized as their own form of intelligence, rather than an intelligent being should be someone that can know that the path that they're on could cause death and destruction, but they're so intelligent that they realize that that if they don't control their own suffering, their own ambition, their own desires for their own gratification, that the intelligence should tell them two things. One, it should tell them that they're what they think they're desiring ultimately what you said in terms of everything being connected is that bringing down the suffering, bringing up the suffering of others brings up your own suffering. right?
It damages yourself.
Yeah. To your point, right, of this interconnected web. But there's a second part to it, that they lack an intelligence because their own prediction is off. So the part that I've been very curious about with certain people that, you know, like you said, there are names that we know and there's names that we don't know. But the sort of drivers that you see in the public that make these massive decisions for us or on behalf of us, you know, these people that are so self-righteous and arrogant with their sense of who they are, the part that allows me to look at them with compassion is that I'm able to see that their own assessment of what they think they're doing is not going to bring them what they their agenda. So, for example, you know, the idea that you know, I'm going to use two examples here that I think most people are familiar with, certainly with Bill Gates. This idea of you know, I will control the planet, I will depopulate, I will help these people because they're so helpless without me and without my operating systems, right? I mean, I think that the word choices are so blatantly obvious in terms of this person, the way that they think, where, you know, computers, these, you know, digital machines suddenly had viruses, right? And antivirus software is a vaccine. You know, the overlap between, you know, Bill Gates, the original criminal complaints were around my operating system is better than your operating system. And it's so much better that I'm going to manipulate the system and I'm going to break antitrust laws because I know that ultimately everybody should be using my product rather than the products that they either desire, and I'll knock out the competition. And the ultimate belief system there is it defies the real world data, so that these people never want to hear. So, for example, at the time, Bill Gates would have sworn to you that Microsoft was the leading product because it was better, not because he was involved in criminal activity and breaking antitrust laws. It was because it was a better product. And even if the data was saying, no, Bill, it's needing constant repair, it's unethical that your own company is now charging for those repairs, their own narcissism is a lack of intelligence where they are not prepared to even judge the system objectively and then go, you're right, how could my product be a better system when on paper it's breaking down more than my competitors? The second part to that is that the fixation on end goal is gigantically disappointing to a mass killer. So this is another reason why you will always see that when given the right set of circumstances, generally mass killers will suicide. And they do this because ultimately their final act is really a deep desire for that suffering and that incompetency and for their misery and pain, their non-acceptance of who they are, their final act of what they're doing, they have built a system, and it goes beyond motivation. This is when you get into an obscure science called conation, which is the science of drive. And they're driven by this idea that by doing this final act of creating death and destruction will get them this reward, this personal reward, the satisfaction that they were just as alive as everyone else. And it doesn't come. It never does. And they end with this big bang that basically leaves them feeling more empty. And so they lack intelligence on their own predictive modeling. And you see this all the time with school shooters or, you know, workplace violence, where the person thinks, if I just did this, sort of the basic thinking, computer technology, if then. And I want to make it once again personal, and unfortunately on my side I have to wrap up. But there's a component to this that I think helps people to solidify a lot of the concepts that we've talked about, including the fact that I think there's a part to me, not a thing, I know, even if other people aren't comfortable with it, there's a part to me that the enabling that we've done of pathology, the enabling of letting things go to the point that these people have given them permission to turn ethics upside down needs to stop. I think that intolerance has a place. And when where I was going with leadership models is that I think Jesus chose an excellent model to say, forgive them, they don't know what they were doing. Moses actually did the opposite. And I think that what we're looking for in this pandemic as a way to end this is we need a combination of both, and then also the sum of the parts is always greater. And so I think that there's a part to it where Moses the Exodus was a surprising admission that sometimes to break a system completely you have to leave it. And so Moses left it. Jesus stayed within it and tried to work the problem within. And what Moses did is he said to Egypt, all right, I'll tell you what, you win. You've given us permission. He traded off, in my opinion, a bunch of really good IP of some great science that he understood. And he traded that off, and then he got permission. They reneged on the deal, at least they tried to, but it was too late. And what he did, strangely, and some historical texts that I've been looking at, is that there's many versions of the story of the Great Exodus, but one of them is written from the Egyptian perspective that I think is interesting, is that there was two layers to the Exodus. And the first one wasn't taking the Israelites to Israel as the Exodus. That came later. The first layer of it was actually to build a alternative community just on the outskirts of town. This massive structures, these idols, the reliance on the technology was all set up in a very similar way to this pandemic to make people feel helpless. Mm-hmm. To like you use some brilliant words where you said it takes away the idea that someone has choice. Right. And so there was this aspect where what Moses did right in front of the rulers is that he built an alternative reality that worked. And it allowed people, it gained credibility to show that there was choices because, he took it one step further. And the first version of some monotheistic God, was actually to say, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to show you that we can survive, just the same as you. And in fact, we'll start thriving without giving credit to any deity at all. And we'll show that some form of atheism is possible, that we will be just fine. We will take the chance, right? And we will show that your superstition and your idols are not actually keeping you alive. And to do that, we'll take ourselves to the outskirts of town, and we will become the pariahs that you've made us. And in return, what we'll do is we'll create theater for you that you can check in on us. And Moses' great wisdom was to show them in a really nice FU. And I think this is what we can start doing to the pharmaceutical companies too, with complete rejection of these models, complete rejection of them, a complete non-reliance. And then lastly, what I want to say around the personal part of where I was going is that the other counterpart that I think is much more nefarious than Bill Gates in terms of sort of a leadership to this is that I really have come to the conclusion for now that this human being called Dr. Martin Rothblatt has spent decades building a network that's very, very much a cult that runs across the world, and they are believers in Martin Rothblatt's power trip and noble goal, where to quote your words in the way that you would describe it, it's the elimination of the biosphere. It is taking everything that we know and eliminating it all. And the saddest part about this for Martin Rothblatt, and I hope that by now Martin Rothblatt is starting to actually hear me in some of these interviews. The saddest thing is that it's not going to bring Martin Rothblatt the desire that he / she has got, which is the desire to not feel the pain and suffering that he or / she has gone through since birth in feeling other. Now,
explain what you mean by he/she.
So this is a trans person who went from Martin Rothblatt to become at one stage the most, I think, the world's highest paid female CEO. Biologically, it was still Martin Rothblatt, who is right. trans, right. and became Martine Rothblatt. My pointing out the pain and suffering is that what is being left out of the trans debate is that the trans debate is being driven by the politics of Dr. Martine Rothblatt. Millions and millions of dollars, probably into the billions, has mm-hmm. gone into a lobbyist agenda for deeply personal reasons. Martine Rothblatt has the power and the money to try and create a world where this person's sexual / gender identity was so painful to this person that they and they are, you know, to use the word that we're using before, they are manipulative and intelligent enough to build a system to essentially eliminate the realness of the world so that they could live just for one moment without pain. Mm-hmm. Now that there is a very easy trick that you can do on a psychiatric ward. If you ever want to know who the person is who's under the most pain, or quote unquote, let's say the sickest, right? Like right. in terms of on a psychiatric ward, the person that needs the most help, it will be the person who is getting one, the most attention, or secondly, it's the person who gets the least attention, but you spot who has the most power. When you spot the person who's getting no attention, but when you dig and you see that they are in charge of everything, you have spotted the psychopath in the system. And when their pain is so torturous that only movies can really, you know, do this descriptor, like, you know, right. sort of Silence of the Lamb kind of stuff. When yeah, they yeah. are so tormented that they are willing to use their apex predator abilities to essentially assassinate the entire world in the attempt to have one moment without pain. And so she's really far. She's very, very far in this goal. In my opinion, the human being, beyond the huge network and the power and the cabals and the money and the banks and all of the stuff, and even deeper, if anybody wants to make this deeply spiritual and they want to talk about other worlds and other creatures, I'm fine with that in their paradigm. Mm-hmm. It's not a paradigm that I know enough about to even have a great opinion on. But what I can say is that the human quality is that when you spot somebody who has so much pain and a lifetime's worth of pain and suffering, with the ability to chameleon their way through, to in essence venomate their way through, to eventually create a system that would even use a bioweapon that has venom on it, to envenomate the world, to exterminate themselves, and Martine Rothblatt's manifesto, to quote her own, to paraphrase her own manifesto, transgender is only a point of a pathway towards transhuman. Exactly. And transhuman is the ability to completely leave one's physical being right. and join with others in an ethereal universe to continue living perpetually. And that pathway is a solid amount of actionable steps that an individual, a community, an organization, and now the entire planet can take so that we essentially all commit suicide and right. join Martine Rothblatt, who may or may not be in the metaverse at that point.
So instead of the Kool-Aid, which Jim Jones would make it simple and said, look, just drink the Kool-Aid and you'll be great. They're saying the metaverse is your Kool-Aid and drink that and you're going to become immortal.
Drink the Kool-Aid in this, in your metaphor, the Kool-Aid is the vaccine.
Okay.
Use the vaccine.
But they know and then, subconsciously that they're not really going to become immortal. No. They're going to be supplanted by dead machines.
That's right. And they don't care, because they'd rather, I mean, this is the basis of my work, the essence of all mass killing. You find that no matter how you spin it, no matter how complicated you want to make it, what mass killers have in common is they're suicidal.
Exactly. And that's because they're so out of touch with themselves, they think that there's nothing.
Yeah, and they don't feel anything. I mean, the physiology of a mass killer is very much it should not, on the theoretical model of a psychopath, really should not be a living creature. These people's even their heart rates, they're at bradycardia, they're at bradycardia the majority of their lives. Prince Andrew says it best. He could not have been described as somebody sweating a victim of his sexual abuse, because he doesn't sweat. He doesn't have emotion. And more importantly, it would take something immense and probably would never happen physically to make a psychopath sweat. I mean, they just don't, they just are not calibrated in that way. Their physiology is at such a low baseline that not only do they not have emotions mentally, but their bodies are not showing physiological emotions.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like you said, we could go on for days. I have to wrap up. And want to just really thank you. It was a sort of an unexpected surprise to be able to bring a piece to this and give it the time that it deserves, which is really the philosophical ideological component that I think people can spend some time thinking about what drives people to this level of hurt.
Well, and you've mentioned a possible positive answer to this, in the sense of setting up parallel civilization. You know, you mentioned Egypt in that sense. And if you just go outside the existing system, which people are doing in many ways now, a lot of projects around the world, and in America, they're setting up parallel medical systems, which are health-based, not poison chemicals that are called medicine. And they're setting up parallel educational systems, honest scientific systems, non-poisonous food systems. Those are in progress, and people can help with that if they want to.
I think it's. I think that there's a part to it that it gives me a little bit of Schadenfreude. There's a part to all of us where we have to watch ourselves finding pleasure in others' suffering. But there's a part to me thinking that it must be slightly confusing, and also gives me hope that somebody could see somebody, for example, that's unvaccinated and is not getting sick. And yet everyone who's vaccinated is getting sick all the time. And I think there's a part to it that there's also hope in creating this parallel universe where you don't submit to the Kool-Aid of the day, and then other people get to see you thrive and they are struggling, and then it becomes much easier for buy-in to happen in reverse.
Yes. You know, self-awareness becomes contagious.
Correct. I love that. That's a really.
I think that's powerful. The pandemic we need to start.
Yep. Yeah. Right. I love it.
Anything that you'd like to tell people about staying in touch with your work and what you're really focused on doing next at this point?
So I think they can always find me at drtaubraun.com. That's drtaubraun.com. Okay. That's a good way for people to leave me with an email address, because I'm always just on the verge of being shut down from whatever platform. People can also find my work. There's a lot of my interviews on places like Rumble and Bridian. Those are good places to see some other things that I've worked on. Ultimately, where I think my work is heading, I mean, drilling down on the science side, I'm really concentrating on understanding acetylcholine. It's pretty complicated because there are even on the receptors there are subtypes, and then there's subtypes of those subtypes, and it really is like it's like wiring and cabling, and so you're getting into something where you've got to work out, okay, so that the immune system is controlled by the subset of nicotinic receptors called alpha 7, and then you can see how that's being exploited in terms of the way that vaccines exploit that, and the way that this vaccine's exploiting it, and even HIV exploits these alpha 7 receptors. So on the science side, I've got my work cut out for me. I think that I'm there's a part to me that is in spending time looking through history and scripture, and seeing what else others did and how they did it, because a lot of people started turning to me, and I started feeling a pressure where people said, "Well, okay, well, we're all on the same side, and you know, we agree with you. What do we do about it?" Right. And I needed to find ways of articulating that, and I certainly am going to say that what you just said is an incredibly important part of it. The self-awareness and being empowered is vital. I think the holding the line for people is also I think people I feel very privileged to have been brought to grow up in South Africa and then to have traveled the world extensively, because I think what it does for us is it helps. I know a lot of people say life is relative, but life is also comparative. And so, like, when people go like, I can't pull my kid out of public school, so of course I'm going to vaccinate them, otherwise they can't go to school. And I'd say, well, you do realize that, you know, that homeschooling would be at least 1,000 times better than even, you know, some of the schools that I've seen where kids literally have to sit in the dirt because they don't have a roof over their head. Like, and some of those kids have become the top people in the world. I mean,
it's a lot better to sit in the dirt than be brainwashed in a real fancy building.
Correct. Or even dead from a substance or that you dead. Had to take. Right. Once again, there's a beautiful piece of scripture that helps with that, which is, I've been telling parents lately, you know, if you think you've got a tough choice about homeschooling at the moment or finding a pod for your kids to participate in, you know, realize that when this happened in Egypt and there was a decree to kill the babies, mothers were forced to find ways like Moses' mother did of getting him into the palace and being adopted, rather than accept a decree to kill her child. And so I think they've got it easy at the moment to say, oh, I just want to enroll him at the local public school. I think that's complicated, but vastly different than some choices that people have made in terms of getting their children over borders and, you know, other horrible choices. The other thing that I'm trying to do is I'm constantly working out the simplicity of solution when it comes to minerals, vitamins, supplements, and food. Mm-hmm. And I'm also reminded, part of a trick, you know, when you talk about brainwashing, something that I want to leave people thinking with, and of course there's wonderful experts that can lend assistance to us. You know, most of the world's weeds that have been, we've been told, oh, that thing, you need to get that out of your garden. That's a weed. Oh, you better pull that up. It will take over. And there lies the entire alternate pharmacy that everybody's looking for.
Yeah, exactly. And even that, there's a whole other aspect of lifestyle details. And the more we tune in on that, the less any kind of pharmacy is even relevant.
Absolutely. Yeah, very much of that. I think that speaks to resilience in terms of the fact that diversity and once again to paraphrase from you, you know, the idea of reminding ourselves that we have choices. You know, I think something that's been fascinating for me throughout at least a couple of decades, but very much heightened during this pandemic, is it can be quite a fun research project to take any pharmaceutical and then just spend, 20 minutes and drill down on what that pharmaceutical was in terms of where it came from. Right. And so I forget which one it is. It's either frankincense or myrrh is the building blocks of the drug called Tamiflu.
Right. But they have a challenge, because if you just use something that's going to help people, it just ruins your business. So you have to engineer it so that it seems to make something better on the surface, but it's guaranteed to cause much worse things long term.
Right. It comes with the inevitable promise that you'll come back to them.
Absolutely. In worse condition, ready for the next remedy.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, let's leave it on that. And let's say, okay. let's not do that. Let's not give them the ability to sell us things where ultimately their goal is recurring, whether it's a recurring patient, a recurring customer, or a recurring slave. I think that there's a wonderful opportunity for us to say, let's gravitate towards things that in its simplicity don't come with a slew of problems that need fixing.
Yes, and to be able to answer in detail what you said people are asking you, and okay, we see all these terrible problems and stuff, and what do we do? And laying that out clearly so that people can relate to it would be a really good idea at this point.
Yeah, and we can only get there through a group effort. That's
exactly, help each other.
Yeah, not come from one person at all.
Okay, well, incredible honor to be able to speak to you for a little while. On
you too, thank you.
Hold on, and we'll say goodbye in the break here.
Yeah, wonderful.
That was Dr. Tao Braun, you guys. I hope you got something out of our discussion, and I really was positively impressed by him, somebody who's really caring about what happens to humanity in the world and working on things to do to make it better for his own understanding, and working on a product that we didn't get to talk about too much, Copperine. And I think if you go to Dr. Dr. Tao Braun, TaoBraun.com, you can see more about this supplement that he's selling, this mixing copper and zinc in a form that is the most helpful for human bodies. And interestingly enough, when they were coming up with the natural protocols for COVID in the early days, including what Dr. Zelenko was doing and others, they were saying that you can't just use hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or quercetin, and you've got to use zinc too, because these other medicines were what's called zinc ionophores. That means they pulled the zinc inside the cell, and then the zinc blocked attack from the outside. And what Dr. Braun is explaining is that for zinc to be safe, it has to be balanced by a certain ratio of copper in a certain form. And that's what he's developed in what he calls Copperine. So check out his site, drtaobraun.com. He's got another product in there that is apparently really incredibly valuable for health in all kinds of situations, including arthritic situations and others, according to his own account of it. And that should be at the same website if you want to check it out. Other than that, I think he's doing great work. That's my impression in general. And it's refreshing to run into a scientist and investigator like Tao Braun that has such a deep awareness of what's going on, knows about Dr. Artis's work, and wants to do things to minimize the danger and help the victims of the vaccine. Because I think that's going to be a huge market, the people who are wanting to recover from the damage that the injection has done. And Dr. Braun and his team are working on that now. So stay up to date with his work at the site we mentioned. He's all over many of the non-censoring video platforms as well. You can see a lot from him on Brighteon and BitChute and Rumble and other places like that. So I think that pretty much wraps it up. We went a little longer than we expected. And stay in touch with us at lostartsradio.com. There's articles and videos that are posted there. They're all free almost every day on what's going on in the world. And our main focus is not just say, you know, all these terrible things are going on, even though that's really true, but it's all a focus on solutions. And it seems to me that you're the key part of that solution. And we touched on this a little bit when we were talking with Dr. Braun about responsibility and blame. And, you know, I was trying to get at the idea that we're 100% responsible, but as victims of brainwashing, we're not really to be condemned or blamed. We're to be healed from it and to get over it and to put it as a phase of world history behind us. And that's what all of us are trying to help each other do, not to fight about who has the best answer, but use the valuable pieces of what everybody comes up with and put them together and construct a healthy, life-oriented society and civilization before the ultimate destruction of the old one, kind of in tandem to that. And I think that's what Dr. Braun's work is attempting to do. So thanks for watching. I really appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Learn everything you can. As we were saying in the discussion, don't assume what you cannot do, because you really don't know until you find out, you know, what the possibilities may be. You come from an amazing place, not physical, but something much higher, no matter what language you use for it. You're being a pure spirit working through a costume. So we need to drop the programming of fighting each other, appreciate each other as all coming from the same place, and help our family members, that's all of us, as much as we can. So if you want to give us any feedback, there's a contact form at lostartsradio.com, and tell us what you think or what you want to see us cover or guests you want to see on the air, or take a look at what we're doing at planetaryhealingclub.com, which is really the focus on changing elements inside ourselves that are forgotten focuses of power that can help heal the world, which is our job, you know, our best use of our time if we can do it. And that means healing yourself, because you can't do one without the other. We're all connected. That's planetaryhealingclub.com. And whatever you do, don't underestimate your power to heal situations, relationships, things in the world, just by who you become. So take good care of yourself, and we'll look forward to seeing you again next week on the show. Take care.